Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden age. I'm Mark LeValnier, and this hour, comedy, later on from the Quaker Party from 1938. But first, it's Fibber McGee and Molly, and a broadcast from January 2nd, 1940 on NBC.
Hi, folks. The program originally canceled for this time will now be heard.
And here it is, the Johnson Wax program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Jimmy Shields and Billy Mills Orchestra. And a wonderful thing what a set of Christmas gift carpenter's tools will do for a guy who ordinarily couldn't split a shingle or pound a nail through a sponge cake. For instance, here at 79 Wistful Vista, one with a saw in his hand and the other with apprehension in her eye, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Boy, this is a wonderful set of tools you give me for Christmas, Molly. I'm just itching to fix something.
Well, just scratch yourself and put that saw away.
Hey, Molly, ain't that dining room table a little wobbly? Ain't one leg shorter than the others?
No, dearie, no. It's all right.
It looks to me
it's wonderful. Perfectly solid.
But that leg...
I never saw a table as substantial.
Yeah, but look...
Just forget it, dearie.
Shucks. I'll bet if I saw the three other legs off even, it'd take the wobble out of it.
Now, please, McGee. You tried that once with the coffee table, remember?
I did?
Yes, and the legs got shorter and shorter till we had to use it for a serving tray.
Shucks, what'd you give me the tools for if you don't want me to use them? It's like giving a kid a new drum and then telling him to be quiet because Papa's got a headache. Yeah.
Well, for heaven's sakes, you don't have to fix things, do you? Why don't you make something?
Well, what'll I make?
Make a bookcase. Make anything. Build a doghouse.
Oh, doghouses. That's kid stuff. I should waste those wonderful tools on a mutt mansion.
McGee, stop that.
Huh?
You're making big dents in that chair.
Well, this arm is loose. I was just hammering it tight. You see how it is now? You couldn't pull it loose with a tent.
Now you see what you did?
Good. Now I can take that chair down in the basement and really go to work on it.
McGee, I won't let you do it.
Dad read it, Molly. There you go again. Always holding me down. Where would Rembrandt have been if his wife had complained about his paints always smelling up the house?
Well, nevertheless, you'll have to use your constructive genius on something besides my furniture.
Okay. I'll build a doghouse. What kind of dogs you like?
Well, I think Pomeranians are cute. Or Pekingeses.
You call them things dogs? Why, they're so small, a mama flea won't let the baby fleas go out and play because they might get Pomeranians on them. I like a man's dog. Maybe an Irish setter, or a wolfhound, or a bugle.
Beagle.
Well...
McGee, I don't care if you get a Saint roll out the barrel Bernard. It's your doghouse and your dog.
Okay, Mrs. McGee. I'll start right away on the project. Now, let's see. First, I got to call the lumber company and order some lumber. Hand me the phone. Hello, operator. Give me the Wistful Vista Lumber Company. Oh, is that you, Mert? Fibber McGee. How's things, Mert? Yes, eh? What'd you do New Year's Eve, Mert? Oh, now, Mert, you didn't really.
Heavenly days. Now what?
What say, Mert? All drunk, eh?
Oh.
What? The neighbors called the police. Oh, boy.
Disgraceful.
What do you know about that, Molly?
What?
They were going to have a party at Mert's house, but they found the root beer was all drunk.
Oh.
Everything was so quiet, the neighbors got worried and called the police.
Hello, Lumber Company. This is Fibber McGee, 79 Wistful Vista. Say, I'm building a doghouse, and I want you to send me some lumber. Huh? No, a doghouse for a dog. Yeah, get it right out here, will you? Okay, Bloom. Thanks.
Well, thank goodness you're really going to do something constructive.
I'll say I am. This is going to be the doghouse of doghouses. A canine Taj Mahal. I'm going to build it with a guest room in case Glowcoat wants to have a friend over for the weekend.
Glowcoat?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to call our dog, Glowcoat. So he won't scratch. I hate a mutt that has to keep rubbing and buffing himself all the time. Now, let's see. Where did I put that song? Come in. Oh, hello there, little girl.
Hi, mister. What you doing?
Who, me?
Well, who'd you think, Pinocchio?
Don't be so impertinent.
Well, gee,
I said, don't be so fresh.
You said impertinent first.
Well, so what? What's the difference?
Well, you sound awful silly, I bet you, if you ask the grocery man for a dozen impertinent eggs.
Dear. That's kind of far-fetched, sis.
Not from our grocery. It's right around the corner. Hey, where'd you get the tools, mister? Where'd you get them,
Santa Claus brung them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, listen, sis, I'm very busy today. What was it you wanted?
You want to buy a poem?
A poem? Who wrote it?
I did, I betcha. I like dandy poultry.
You mean poetry, not poultry.
What's the difference?
Well, you'd know if you ever tried to fricassee a sonnet. Well, okay, sis. Let's hear the poem.
Okay, mister. Can I have some music with it?
No, read it raw.
All righty. Title.
Mm-hmm.
My New Year Resolution.
Oh, yeah.
When every new year comes around, folks say I always can be found with pen and paper on the table, making up some peachy resolutions the very best that I'm ever able.
Hey, you got a kind of a poetic Charlie horse in that last line, sis. It sort of limps.
Don't be impertinent. To continue, I write down 10 things I must do to start the year all bright and new, then tear them up as is my custom, because I know darn well I'm going to bust them. The end. You want to buy it, mister?
No.
Okay, I'll give it to you. Here.
Thank you.
here's where I'm going to build the doghouse, right here at the corner of the garage.
Oh,
see?
Yeah.
I'm going to build it with a big living room, a sleeping room, a dining room.
A dining room for a dog?
Certainly, and he's going to get plenty to eat, too. You know the old saying, it takes a heap of liver to make a dog a home. Don't you get it, Molly? It takes a heap of liver
Ain't
to...
Ain't funny, McGee.
Oh, well. Dumb animals, dumb jokes. Let's see. Here, take one end of this tape, Molly.
Whoopee! Happy New Year, everybody! Yippee!
Same to you, Grandma, but ain't you a little late? This is the 2nd of January.
So what, sonny? Better late than sober is what I always say.
Say age before beauty, but you're the first one I ever seen that got it that way.
That was a snappy one, Skippy.
Yeah, I'm thumping him in there tonight.
Oh, boy. Here's a toast to New Year. Friends, may I...
Hey, look out, Grandma. Look, your cigarette. It's burning.
What, say? Oh, ouch. Doggone it, I burnt the toast. Oh,
I knew 1940 would introduce a lot of wrinkles, but I didn't expect them to walk right into our own backyard.
Well, come on, McGee, get busy. The doghouse, remember?
Oh, yes, the doghouse. Well, in the first place, I got to move...
Hello there, Molly and Fibber. What goes on?
Oh, McGee is building a doghouse, Mr. Wilcox.
What kind of dog has he got?
Well, he hasn't got one yet.
I ain't quite decided what kind.
I think you ought to have a good hunting dog. Would you be interested in a pointer?
Oh, boy, I sure would. You know anybody that's got a good pointer for sale, Harl?
Well, I'll give you one. Free.
Oh, how wonderful.
Don't forget to use Johnson's Glow Coat on your kitchen linoleum.
Well, we'll certainly do that, Mr. Wilcox.
Yeah, well, when can I see the dog, Harlow?
What dog?
I thought you were going to give us a pointer.
I just did. Use Johnson's Glow Coat. That's the finest pointer I could give anybody. So long, folks.
I'll be a series of dashes. I would like to get a hold of a good pointer, though, Molly. I had one years ago, you know.
Oh.
Old Matt.
Matt?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you called him Matt because he was always laying in front of the door.
No, his real name was Man About Town, but I just used his initials, M-A-T.
Oh.
Matt was the smartest pooch I ever seen. He used to sit in the wings of the theater when I was playing vaudeville and watch my act.
Well, he was not only smart, but courageous.
Well, sir, one day in the middle of my act, who should come walking out on the stage but Matt? He just stood there, stiff as a board, nose pointing out into the audience, tail out straight like a ramrod.
What did the audience do? Put his hat on and go home?
Just then, a guy in the third row stood up and gave me a Bronx cheer, a raspberry. Imagine a dog sensing that.
What do you mean, sensing that?
He was a hunting dog, and he knew I was going to get that bird. Another time when I was up in the...
Oh, wait a minute, McGee. Look who's coming around the house.
Uh-oh, Mrs. Uppington. The quick trick in clubs.
Right. Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? So nice to see you.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Miss McGee.
Hi, Uppy. How do you like the Beagle Pavilion I'm building?
Oh,
the doghouse.
Is that what that is? Uh-huh. Well, I thought it was... Oh. Well, I just thought I'd drop by and give you my best wishes. Now, stop me if you've heard it, but... Happy New Year!
Well, thanks, Uppy, and to coin a phrase, the same to you.
And if I may phrase the coin, e pluribus unum.
Oh, oh, how delightful. Phrase a coin. Yes. All right.
Well, how'd you celebrate New Year's Eve, Uppy?
Well, my young nephew, Father Ingill Uppington, was home from college, and he took me to the most delightful place. I don't quite remember the name of it, but I think he said we were going to a place called Tom and Jerry's for some Jack and Jollies.
Ah, dear. Oh, McGee and I had a wonderful time, too. We had a wrong side table at a nightclub.
Ringside, Molly. There was nothing wrong with that table. In fact, we were so close to the orchestra, I let the clarinet player cool my coffee. Did you have a good time, Uppy?
Oh, my dear, I must have had, because my nephew told me the next morning he never heard anyone play the snare drum the way I did.
Oh, you better watch out, Uppy. You're in danger of losing your social dignity. After all, you got to keep up the aristocratic tradition of Wistful Vista, you know.
Oh, thank you, Mr. McGee. That's so sweet of you. Do you really consider me an aristocrat?
Why, certainly he does, Mrs. Uppington.
In fact, Uppy, I've heard it said you were so aristocratic, you suffer from blue toothbrush.
Bluetooth. Well, so you're building a doghouse, are you? And are you familiar with the care and handling of dogs?
Who, me? Why, shucks, Uppy. I've been a judge of dog shows ever since I was chin high to a child. I used to get more applause than any dog in the place. Had to take a bow at the end of every show. Oh, I was really a wow. Bow Wow McGee, I was known as in there. Bow Wow McGee, the biggest breeder of barking brutes that ever busted a biscuit for a Boston bull, badly bitten by big bunches of bad bloodhounds, but bravely breaking them to beg for bones and be benevolent bodyguards to bouncing babies, bandying bird dogs, boar hounds, and beagles with bits of beefsteak and brilliant brain work, and bagging to build up as the brightest boy of the beast bossers from the bounding billows of Bimini Bay to the Let's Have a Song, folks. What do you say?
I went away, one thing is clear to me. You were dearer than dear to me from the moment you came. Evenings by your side, I learned to love the night, but the loveliness of the night is no longer the same. When day is done and shadows fall, I dream of you. When day is done, I think of all the joys we knew, that yearning. And grass is wet with twilight dew. My lonely heart is sinking with a sigh. Oh, I miss your tender kiss the whole day through. I miss.
Now, look at that now.
What?
I've sawed this 2x4 off 3 times, and it's still too short.
Well, keep trying, dearie. What's all this metal grill work for?
Oh, that, huh? I'm going to build a fire escape on one side of the doghouse.
A fire escape?
Yeah.
What do you expect your Airedale to do, smoke in bed?
No, but you can't...
Hello there, friends. Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve, and the same to you.
And many of them, Gildy, old pal.
Well, thank you, McGlee. I'm glad to see the New Year start so auspiciously.
What you mean? What's so suspicious about building a doghouse?
I didn't say suspicious, I said auspicious. That means under good omen.
Oh, yes. Sure. I catch on to it.
Ah, my. It's nice to start into 1940 with you two boys friends again.
It certainly is, Mrs. McGee. Definitely. I guess McGee and I just got off on the wrong foot, didn't we, McGee?
Wrong foot is right, Gildersleeve. We was playing double hopscotch on our own bunion. Hand me that hammer, will you, Bud?
Aye, certainly, McGee. Here.
Thanks.
You say you're building a doghouse, McGee?
Yes, he is, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, as I always say, Mrs. McGee...
What did you say, Mr. Gildersleeve?
I said it seems to me that the only way...
McGee, stop that hammering a minute. Mr. Gildersleeve's trying to talk.
What say, Molly?
I say stop that hammering. I can't hear what Mr. Gildersleeve is saying.
You'll have to talk louder. I can't hear you on account of all that jazz, right, and hammering.
Well, you're doing the hammering.
Ah,
was that? What was you saying, Gildy?
What? Oh, well, I don't remember now. Say, how about letting me help you with this doghouse, McGee?
Huh?
Oh, I just love to do this sort of thing. You know, I come from a long line of cabinet workers myself.
Is that so? Politicians or carpenters?
My great-grandfather made the first wooden leg in this state.
Is that so?
Oh, you should have seen the hand-carved muscles in the calf. Here, let me go to work, McGee. Wait till I take off my coat.
Oh, isn't it nice to have Mr. Gildersleeve helping you, dearie?
Yeah, it's great. We ought to get it done in twice the time now.
Yes, I think so myself. Now, look here, McGee.
Excuse me, please, but what is the name of the occupant? Who lives here?
This is the McGee residence, sir. Why?
Well, I'm in charge of the tabulation of the tenants. I'm employed by the government. The government. I count. I'm the census taker.
The census taker? Well, you're starting a little early this year, aren't you, my boy?
Yeah. Besides that, he's got water in his gas. Well, you'll have to come back later, but I'm busy.
Anyway, why start here, Mr. Census Taker?
Well, maybe I'd better elucidate. Let me explain. I have to get a head start on the other canvas, the other census takers. Because we're counting the noses. And the house down the street is the resident. Well, Jimmy Durante lives there. Good day.
Well, I better go in and start dinner, McGee. You go on ahead with your work.
Okay, Molly.
And I can't tell you how pleased I am to see you and Mr. Gildersleeve so congenial once more.
Well, Mrs. McGee, the new year, you know. I like to start off with a clean slate. Well, McGee, what do I do first?
Just trim off them timbers there, Gildy. You know how to use a crosscut saw?
Why, certainly I do. Just give me that saw.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Are you right-handed?
What? Yes, I am. Why?
Oh, I just wondered. That's a left-handed saw.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Careful.
Well, I may be a little clumsy at first, but I'll catch on to it. Well, let's go, McGee.
Okay.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hi-ho, hi-ho. Did I hit your finger, McGee?
No, you hit your own finger.
I did? Oh, so.
Well, we're doing pretty good, Gildy, old man, at that.
Well,
beautiful
we certainly
job,
are,
eh?
McGee. Beautiful job.
Yes, sir.
Maybe we better go into business together, huh? You got the tools and I've got the brain. Well, what do we do now? Put the roof on?
Yes, we better put the roof on. You hold it while I pound the nails.
Oh, no. You hold it while I pound the nails, McGee. You haven't let me pound one nail yet. I love to pound nails, McGee.
Well, it's my set of tools, ain't it?
You're just selfish, that's what you are.
Well, what of it? I know more about this business than you do.
Is that so? I guess I took manual training in high school, didn't I?
And so what? Chucks, they tell me I built my own bassinet when I was 8 months old.
Well, I don't care. I want to pound a nail.
Oh, stop whining.
I'm not whining!
You were, too. Chucks, if you want to build something, why don't you go over in your own backyard and build
something? Now, look here, McGee. I came over here to help you, and this is all the thanks I get.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to start fighting again...
Oh, yeah. Look at here, you big bully. Here, knock that chip off my shoulder.
What?
Go ahead. Knock it off. I dare you. I double dare you. Knock it off.
Okay, McGee, I guess I kind of just flew off the handle.
You fly off the handle so much, Gildersleeve, you ought to have a pilot's license.
Yeah, pilot's license. That's very good. Or is it?
I don't know.
All right, you pound the nails, McGee.
Okay, let's go.
Say, wait a minute, McGee. You forgot something.
What you mean?
The door. Where's the door?
Huh?
The door. How is your dog going to get in and out?
Oh, my gosh, I forgot to saw a door. Now we got to take the dad-ratted whole thing all down the
floor. No, we haven't. I'll get inside and saw a hole in the front.
Oh, no, you don't, Gildersleeve.
Lift the roof off.
You want to have all the fun, eh? I'll get inside and saw the door.
Oh, gee whiz, McGee. I want
to
do...
Cut it out, Gildersleeve. I guess I got a right to get into my own doghouse, ain't I? Here, help me lift this roof up.
Oh, shucks.
Okay. Hand me the saw.
Here you are, McGee. You better kneel down now so you can see better.
Okay, it's not a bad idea. You let me know if I'm getting it even.
Don't worry, McGee. I'll see that everything gets even.
Hey, what are you doing? Take that
that roof off of there. Hey, get it, please. Hey.
I certainly love to pound nails, McGee.
Hey. Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Now, quit kidding and let me out of here.
I just remembered what I came over here for, McGee.
Huh?
I hope you have a very doggy New Year. Hi ho, hi ho, and off to work we go.
Heavenly days, what are you doing in there? Come on out.
I can't. I'm nailed in. Get the tools and pry me out.
There aren't any tools here.
Dad, rest that Gildersleeve. Is the show over, Molly?
Yes, it is. Why?
Well, I just wanted to say, Happy New Year, folks. May your 40 be fair and fat.
And the same for me.
Good night.
Good night, Al.
Otto Wilcox, inviting you all to join us next Tuesday night at the same time. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Fibber McGee and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of January, 1940 on NBC. At that time, part of the network's Tuesday night lineup at 9:30, over 27 million people tuned in for that broadcast. It's an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Livonier. And now, the amazing comedian and voice actor Tommy Riggs as star on The Quaker Party. Riggs was known for performing not only as himself, but as Betty Lou Berry, a 7-year-old girl. And although compared to radio comedian Edgar Bergen, who was a ventriloquist with an actual wooden dummy shown for the studio audience, Tommy Riggs impersonated Betty Lou simply with his voice, and he did move his lips, but fooled radio audiences for years as if there were an actual Betty Lou. His talent was so uncanny, in fact, that he was examined by doctors at Cornell Medical Center, and they came up with a prognosis that he had bivocalism, meaning that he could have his normal baritone voice, but also a true higher pitch of a younger girl. In no way a falsetto or an imitation. He could actually do it. Enjoy his talent now in this broadcast of The Quaker Party from October 1st, 1938 on NBC.
Think you're coming, don't you?
Don't I what, Betty Lou?
Don't you know we're having a party with Quaker Oats and everything? Yum, yum.
The makers of delicious Quaker Oats present for your enjoyment The Quaker Party, starring Tommy Riggs and his famous little creation, Betty Lou, the new band sensation of the year, Larry Clinton and his orchestra, that lovely singer of songs, Bee Wayne, and the first of our famous guest stars, Hollywood's original glamour girl, Miss Zazu Pitts. When Tommy Riggs was playing football and entertaining at the College Smokers, he discovered that he had two voices. One his own, and the other the voice of a cute little bundle of mischief whom he called Betty Lou Barry. Well, last year, Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou achieved remarkable success in radio when they appeared for 48 consecutive weeks on the Rudy Valley Hour. This little character, Betty Lou, who exists only in the voice and imagination of Tommy Riggs, has won for herself a permanent place in the hearts of thousands. Your acclaim has rightfully entitled them to a radio show of their own. So tonight, Quaker Oats takes pleasure in bringing you Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou.
Thank you, folks, and thank you, Dan Seymour. I just want to say that for Betty Lou and me, this is probably the proudest moment we've ever known, the opening of a new big show of our own. I just hope it'll give you as much happiness as it's giving us.
And gee whiz, me too, Mr. Tommy.
I too.
Yes, I know, and me too. But, Mr. Tommy.
Yes, Betty Lou.
Who was that man that was just talking about us?
That's Dan Seymour, our new announcer. You see, this is a new program, honey. We have a new sponsor, Quaker Oats, who puts on this show and pays all the bills.
Well, my daddy pays all the bills, too, but he isn't Quaker Oats. Where's Mr. Valley?
Well, we used to be on Mr. Valley's show, honey, but this is a new show. And now we have our own band leader, Mr. Larry Clinton, who has one of the finest orchestras in the country.
Well, is he as pretty as Mr. Valley?
Well, I'll let you decide that for yourself. Well, Larry.
Yes, Tommy?
Say, I want you to meet a brand new fan, Miss Betty Lou Barry.
Where is she?
Here I am, Mr. Clinton.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Well, anyway, how do you do, Betty Lou?
Oh, I do fine, thank you. Do you do all right?
No, Betty Lou, you'll embarrass him.
Oh, then he doesn't do so good, huh? Well, I know why, too. What's that funny thing you play, Mr. Clinton?
This? Why, that's a baton.
Well, do you know what?
No, what?
You should ought to play it louder, because nobody can hear you.
He doesn't play it, Betty Lou. He just waves at the boys in the band.
But they don't know him, huh?
Well, what makes you think they don't know him?
Because I watched him, and not one of them waved back, so there, too.
Well, now, wait. Maybe I can explain this, Betty Lou. I use this little stick to keep time with.
Is that all you've got to keep time with?
Yes.
Well, gee whiz, he isn't doing so good, Mr. Tommy. He hasn't even got a watch.
Tommy, maybe we'd better show Betty Lou just how we keep time with this little stick. Will you fill in with the lyrics?
What's the lyrics, Mr. Tommy? And where do you fill in?
Well, Larry, I'm stuck. The stick. I'm no millionaire, but I'm not the type to care, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams. It's my universe, even with an empty purse, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams. Wouldn't take the wealth on Wall Street or a road where nature trod, and I calculate I'm worth my weight in goldenrod. Lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams. Wouldn't take the wealth on Wall Street or a road where nature trod, and I calculate I'm worth my weight in goldenrod. Oh, lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury. I've got, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams.
Oh, Mr. Tommy, Mr. Tommy.
Yes, Auntie Mama.
I got them flowers for Miss B. Wayne that you asked me to get for.
Flowers for Miss B. Wayne? Oh, the pretty lady that sings.
Oh, I didn't know you was here, Betty Lou. This is a secret between Mr. Tommy and me. We's cooking up something.
Oh, goody, Aunt Jemima. Pancakes, huh?
Not this time, honey. This is a different kind of cooking. This recipe calls for 3 dozen red roses smothered down in chocolate bonbons.
Gee whiz. Are you in love with her, Mr. Tommy?
Betty Lou, please, I hardly know her. I merely admire her, that's all. She doesn't even know that.
Well, then maybe we should ought to tell her, huh?
Well, I'm afraid to tell her.
Well, I'll bet Mr. Seymour won't be afraid to tell her. Oh, Mr. Seymour.
No, no, Betty Lou, this is a secret.
Oh, what, me, Betty?
Yes, Mr. Tommy's in love with B. Wayne, and it's a secret, and 3 dozen roses and 2 dozen boom-booms, and he doesn't know what to do about it, and it's a secret.
Well, maybe we better get Larry Clinton and go into a huddle.
Now, wait a minute, Danny, I hardly know the girl.
Oh, trust me, Tommy, I won't tell a soul. Oh, Larry.
Yes, Dan.
Get this. Tommy's madly in love, and it's a secret.
You mean it was a secret?
Well, Tommy, I think you're full of getting married.
Married? Me. Listen, I just had an idea I might take her out tonight after the show.
Well, now, why don't you? Oh, B.
Yes, boys.
Well, here she is. Go ahead, ask her.
Well, B, are you doing anything tonight?
Why, no, Tommy.
Well, then, would you, would you like to sing for us now?
I'd love to.
Oh, gee, Mr. Tommy, your face is awful red, but you didn't ask her.
Well, I knew all the time I couldn't, Betty Lou, so I scribbled this little note. Now, when she finishes her song, I want you to give it to her.
All right.
But remember, don't tell anybody. This is a secret.
All right, Mr. Tommy. Oh, Mr. Danny. Oh, Mr. Larry. I've got another.
I can see that this love was meant to be. Only a poor fool, never schooled in the whirlpool of romance, could be are as worthless as tin to me. Without you, life will never begin to be. So love me as I love you in my reverie. Make my dream a reality. Let's dispense with formality. Come to me in my reverie.
Ah, that was lovely, Bee. Really perfection. And now...
Oh, Mr. Tommy, Mr. Tommy.
Yes, Betty Lou. What in the world are you limping for?
Because there's something wrong with my foot. That's what I'm limping for.
Something wrong with your foot?
Yes, because when I got up, I couldn't feel it. And now it's all prickly and it hurts like everything, too.
Well, there's nothing wrong with your foot, honey. It's just asleep.
Then gee whiz, it must be having an awful bad dream.
Well, you can't dream with your foot, Betty Lou. You dream with your brain. You can't walk with your foot and feel with your foot.
And see with your foot.
See with it? Now, what can you see with your foot?
You can see if your shoes are too tight, so there, too.
But by the way, did you deliver my note to Miss Wayne?
Huh?
I say, did you give that note to Miss Wayne?
To Miss Wayne?
Yes, to B. To B.
Well, my daddy said Mr. Shakespeare wrote that.
Wrote what?
To be or not to be and everything. He said Mr. Shakespeare was...
Never mind Shakespeare. What'd she say when you gave it to her?
When I gave what to her?
The note I wrote.
Oh. Well, she said...
Yes?
She said,
Well, what's the matter?
Oh, I know. She said she liked it a whole bunch, except she wished it was vanilla.
Miss Wayne said that?
Yeah, no. My little playmate Janie said that when I bought her an ice cream cone when she was crying because her cat was sick.
But what's this got to do with Miss Wayne?
Well, I bet she likes ice cream cones and bum-bums and everything nice, and she gets a new fur coat every year, too, she does.
Miss Wayne does?
No, little Janie's cat does, don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you think cats are awful lucky to get nice new fur coats without even having to pay for them, too?
Well, I guess they appreciate it. They certainly take good care of the coats.
Janie's cat doesn't.
She doesn't take care of her coat?
No, because I tried all summer and I couldn't make her swallow even one mothball.
All righty, well, let's get back to that note and to Miss Wayne.
Did you know she had five kittens?
She had five kittens.
Well, I mean little Janie's cat did. Five little kittens all at once.
Quintuplets.
Yeah, no, Maltese.
But, young lady, about that note.
And she had a dog that had puppies and a goose that had geeses and...
Now, wait a minute. It strikes me that you keep trying to change the subject. Did you deliver the note or didn't you?
Huh?
Now, listen, young lady, I'll give you just 5 minutes to figure out what you did with that note. And when I come back, I want the truth and nothing but the truth.
The truth and nothing but the truth. Oh, boy. A casket, a casket. I hope he doesn't ask it. That note I took from Mr. Tommy. On the way, I dropped it. Yes, on the way, I dropped it. I know somebody picked it up because I couldn't find it. I was trucking on down like you and you without a single thing to do. I was pecking all around. I must have dropped it on the ground. Oh, a casket. Just hide me in a basket. When Mr. Tommy finds it out, I think that I shall die.
Was it red?
No.
Was it brown?
No.
Was it blue?
a little yellow basket.
Ladies and gentlemen, when we decided to have this party tonight, Betty and I both agreed that the one person who'd add a joyous note to the goings-on is that happy, laughing glamour girl from Hollywood, the lady who washed her hands and now she can't do a thing with them, Miss Zazu Pitts.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, welcome to the Quaker party, Miss Pitts.
Oh, goodness. I didn't know this was a party. I'd have worn my other dress.
Well, I wonder if you'd tell us something about Hollywood.
Well, it's in California.
I see.
They make pictures there.
Well, no, what I meant was, from your point of view, what's the most interesting thing in Hollywood?
The man. But I haven't been there for several weeks, so maybe it's all changed now.
Well, just where have you been?
I've been making personal appearances. Last week, I was in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, was there anything in Columbus that you liked particularly?
The man.
Isn't there anything more interesting than men?
If you find something, I wish you'd let me know.
Well, just what kind of an act do you do on your personal appearance tour?
Well, I talk.
That's interesting. What did you talk about?
Well, I usually say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Or if it was the afternoon, I'd say, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And then I'd go on from there.
And what would you do?
Well, I'd be careful to explain that any similarity between me and persons, living or dead, was purely accidental.
Well, didn't you do anything else?
Oh, yes, I did imitation.
Really? And who'd you imitate?
A Zazu Pitts.
But you are a Zazu Pitts.
I know. That made it more authentic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. Have you prepared anything special to do for us tonight?
Oh, yes. I have a play about Alaska. It's called Scrawny of the North. I play the title role.
Sounds very entertaining.
You can play the hero, Mr. Wiggs, or Biggs.
The name is Jiggs. I mean Riggs.
Well, let's rehearse the love scene now, shall we?
But where's my part?
Oh, I think it'll be more fun just to make it up as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
Now, put your arms around me.
Miss Pitts, we're wasting time here.
I'm not.
Pardon, folks. Pardon me, but is something burning out here?
No, Mr. Seymour. Just a false alarm. But now that you're here, we can use you in my play. Here, take this part.
Well, thanks. Say, this is just a blank sheet of paper.
That's right, Mr. Seymour. You don't talk at all. You just melt.
Melt?
Yes, you're an iceberg.
Oh, Miss Pitts, I'm Betty Lou. Can I be in the play? Can I be an iceberg, too?
Well, you're rather small for an iceberg, Betty Lou.
Well, maybe I can be an ice cube, huh?
Yes. No. Oh, dear me. You're getting me all confused.
Pardon me. My name is Larry Clinton. I think you're a Peach Pitts. Have you got a part in this play for me?
My, so many cute men around here. You can play the lookout, Mr. Clinton. You have one line to say, icebergs ahoy. Will you try it, please?
Icebergs ahoy.
Oh, louder, Mr. Clinton.
Icebergs ahoy.
Well, I suppose that's your mediocre best. Now, Aunt Jemima.
Yes, Miss Pitts.
Aunt Jemima, you will play Mr. Clinton's echo. You know what an echo is?
Oh, yes, and that's double talk.
No! No. If Mr. Clinton says good morning, you say good morning. Now read your line, Mr. Clinton.
Good morning.
No, no, the line in the play.
Oh, icebergs ahoy.
Good morning.
Oh. Oh, dear, we're all mixed up. You just echo whatever he says, Aunt Jemima.
Oh, yes, and I see.
Will you both try it now, please?
Icebergs ahoy.
Icebergs ahoy!
Dear me, the echo is louder than the regular voice. Well, I suppose that's the way it's going to be. Come on, let's put this script on ice, Mr. Clinton. some overture music, if you please.
Scrawny of the North, the saga of the mighty struggle of men against the sea, the struggle of men against the frozen Arctic, the struggle of men against Zazu Pitt. What a struggle. As our play opens, we find little Zazu talking to her mother, Zazu Zay. I might add that Miss Pitt plays both these parts, a difficult task for any actress. But on with the play.
Hello? Is anyone home? Who's there? Little Zazu, come in, child.
Gee, she does that good. You can't tell one voice from the other.
Quiet, Betty Lou.
Little Zazu. Yes, Zazu, Zazu.
Zazu, 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 Zazu.
Betty Lou.
Mother, has you conned Tom, the man I've loved for 15 years in this frozen, desolate North without any modern improvements, come yet? No, child, but he'll be here any minute on his way through to Winnipeg, where he will sell his furs, get some money, and come back and marry you if he knows what's good for him.
Gee, we know all about it now, don't we?
Quiet, Betty Lou.
Come in.
Wish me well, I'm on my way.
Oh, gee, you're awful funny, Mr. Tommy.
Quiet, Betty Lou, I'm acting.
That's what's funny.
Yukon, where are you going?
I'm a-mushing down to Winnipeg, gal.
I can't see why you don't do more mushing around here.
Can't stop for that now. Got a long trip ahead of me. I'll bring you back the present. You've been a fine sweetheart. You'll make a good wife to boot. Well, I'm off.
Icebergs ahoy.
Icebergs ahoy!
Not yet, not yet. Oh, you've spoiled the whole scene. Oh, well, even DeMille has his troubles. On with the play.
Mushing down to Winnipeg, we find our hero fighting ice and snow.
Mush, mush, mush. Mush, mush, mush.
Mr. Tommy, shouldn't you ought to say Quaker Oats?
Which way to Winnipeg, stranger?
You're in Winnipeg.
I thought them buildings was icebergs.
Iceberg ahoy.
Iceberg ahoy!
Not yet.
How much you give me for those furs, Pard?
Can't give you no cash money, but I'll swap you even for anything in this store.
It's a deal. Say, what's that bar?
That bar is a mirror.
Mirror? You're crazy. That bar is a picture of me. I'll take it. There's one fur. There's two furs. There's three furs.
Go on, go on.
That's fur enough. Well, I'm off.
You're telling me. So long, stranger.
Mushing back north, we find our hapless hero fighting the icy hand of the Northland that holds him in its grip, while little Zazu awaits in her lonely cabin.
Ma, I wonder where Yukon is. Child, you can't never tell.
Open up there, gal.
It's Yukon Tom.
Hi-ho, Zazu.
Well, gal, it's sure good to see you. For 40 days and 40 nights, I've been fighting that blizzard to reach you.
Never mind that. Where's my present?
Oh, well, here it is. Open it up careful-like.
Land sakes, what's this?
That feller in Winnipeg call it a mirror. It's really a picture of me. Take a look.
Why? Why, you deceiver of young womanhood. You destroyer of girlish dreams. This ain't no picture of you. This is a picture of some funny-looking hussy from Winnipeg.
Thank you, Miss Fitz, for your vivid picture of the frozen North. And now here's Larry Clinton to warm up things a bit with his own interpretation of The Dance of the Hours.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week the Quaker Party will again present Larry Clinton, his orchestra, and Dee Wayne. As our special guest of the evening, with his own news and views of the World Series, we are having Colonel Lemuel Q. Snoop Day, Snoop Nagel. Aunt Jemima will bring Betty Lou along, and yours truly will probably ride in the same taxi.
Good night, everybody. See you next Saturday night. And please don't forget to ask your grocery man for your Quaker oats, too, for they are yum, yum. Now, Mr. Seymour?
Yes, now, Betty Lou.
This is the National Broadcasting Company, too.
The Quaker Party, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of October, 1938 on NBC. Wrapping up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.